Welcome to the Dad's Lifting Dads podcast, Ben Byfield. Ben, thanks for coming
My pleasure. Didn't have to travel far.
here. Ben, yeah, I just wanted to I guess give a short, I guess, spiel about you. So I came across you through a mutual friend, Dan. We met, and it's interesting. When I first met you, we were training for the beep test. We were heavy in doing the beep test then, and I'd not known about you, not known kind of what you did previously, and then yeah, just I guess we went through that, but it was more the conversation that we shared after that has always impacted me more than the training itself. Yeah, you just had really, I think, probably a blend of metaphorical, philosophical, some deep views on a lot of subjects that we talked about that morning. And then knowing you more and more through joining your movement practice, yeah, I got to find out a little bit more about you, found out that you were a dad, and you also had, I guess, some different, I guess, perspectives on fatherhood and on being a man as well. So yeah, I can't really put you in a box to describe what you do or who you are. Yeah, that's not my job, but I just want you to start with, I guess, your origin story. So, I guess a little bit about who you are, and then if we dive into your, I guess, childhood and upbringing and relationship with your folks.
Sure. So it started when I fell into a vat of acid, and that's my villain origin story. Now I Australian. I grew up on. Well, I was born in Newcastle. I moved to the Central Coast. Well, I was moved to the Central Coast when I was three. Was no choice of my own, I guess. And we lived here for my entire adolescence and teenage years, on the Central Coast, New South Wales. And I've spent most of my life here, though I spent 8 years from 2012 to 2020 living in Canada, specifically in Toronto, in the city. The origin, I mean, I guess in the context of fatherhood and relationships, especially, it's probably noteworthy that I'm an only child. I don't have any siblings. I feel like that's It's a. It always struck me as funny that you would define we're defined as being an only child. Like other people with siblings aren't defined as, oh, you're someone with siblings. Like we don't have a name for that or a word, but we have a word for an only. Oh, you're an only child. But I think that's probably informed a lot of my life and who I am and how I am. I've always, well, I guess. To relate it to my upbringing, my parents were together my whole life, so I guess I was very fortunate in that way that I had two parents in the home growing up, and I don't remember when, but I always knew that I was going to be a father. Like it always was just in the back of my mind that this is something that was just it wasn't even a choice. It was more just like this is going to happen at some point. So, I think that informed a lot of how I've thought and how I've been throughout my life as well. And maybe we can talk about some examples of that later. In terms of my profession, I guess I was very lucky and very fortunate that my parents always got me involved in learning and always encouraged learning, both in school but also in extracurricular activities. Like they would pay for me to and enroll me in various sports, like soccer, karate. I played basketball and swam for many years growing up, and also in learning instruments. And I'm really grateful for that, just getting me involved in learning piano and violin and saxophone, and just always encouraging me to try stuff, but never putting a ton of pressure on me to like excel or to reach a certain level, just to do it. So that's Yeah, I feel very fortunate for that, and very, very, very grateful, to have always been encouraged. And I think that's helped cultivate a real passion and hunger to learn more than anything. Like I've come to realize I'm a very curious person, and I enjoy the process of learning, like quite a lot. and more so than anything that's measurable. Like I remember when I was learning piano, for example, I loved playing piano and learning, but I hated the assessments. I hated the being examined. And I found that with all the pursuits I've been involved with. I went through high school, like finished high school and enrolled in university, largely with the encouragement of my dad, who I was quite, you know, unsure of what I wanted to do when I was in my late teens, early 20s. And my dad was really good about encouraging me just to go to school and get a degree, even just for the sake of getting one.
Yeah.
He would always say, because it's valuable on a resume. It doesn't matter what it's in, just showing people that you can, you know, enroll and complete a degree communicates some level of competence. And so I think I've probably, it's tough to talk about these things, you know, and not sound arrogant, but I think I, if anything, I have a predisposition towards being a good thinker more than say a good feeler or even a good mover. And so I was able to ride through a lot of school with very minimal extra effort, just through paying attention in class and then just absorbing what I could and trying to understand the concepts, but I was terrible at homework and assignments and whatnot. So when it came to choosing a university degree, part of it was limited by like, you know, pretty average scores in the HSC. So my selection was limited to a degree, but also out of interest, I just looked at what I was available and thought, well, exercise science, that seems like the most interesting. I found PE and particularly the theory aspect really fascinating in school, and especially thinking about what seemed to happen to people as they age. It seemed that a lot of people suffer and suffer maybe unnecessarily because it's a product of choices, lifestyle choices, and a lot of that related to exercise or lack of exercise and behavior, like partaking in unhealthy behaviors. So I found that very interesting, and I was very curious about learning what I could do to not suffer unnecessarily as an old person, you know. So I think that encouraged me to get involved in studying exercise science in university. And then a lot of my jobs and a lot of the things that I just loved was around movement and learning, not just the movement itself, but like learning movements and then teaching as well. I got heavily into boxing when I was 14 to 20 years old, and I really loved learning and I loved teaching. So when I went to Canada, which was perhaps we can get into the reasons why, but basically it was a call to adventure. I wanted to go traveling. I went to Canada and found myself in a position where I could work as a personal trainer. And that's where I really realized that that's what I love to do, is helping people through movement, through the practice of movement. And it goes, I think any trainer will tell you that it goes much deeper than that. You know, the joke in our field is that we're the cheapest therapists in the world. I think hairdressers and other people of a similar occupation, you know, have a similar experience.
Yeah.
But I realized how transformative a movement practice can be for not just the body, but for the mind and for the heart, maybe for the soul, because that's what I'd found. When on reflection, I realized that's why I really loved it. And to be able to share that with people and to help guide people to being better versions of themselves through a movement practice, it just seemed obvious that that's what I was interested in and what felt good and what I was in a position to do. So for the last, I guess, last 10 years especially, I've really dived deep into exploring, learning about, being really curious about movement as a concept, teaching movement, practicing movement. But then by extension, you get into all other kinds of interesting areas about life and relationships and the self and self-knowledge. So, at the moment I'm on the Central Coast. We moved back in 2020 from Canada with my wife, who was pregnant at the time. We had our first son in February 2020. And so since then, we've been parents raising him, and I've been working on building my own personal business here to run personal training and also group movement classes, which, as you mentioned, you got involved with as well. That's how we really connected. And so that kind of leads us to where we are.
Yeah, beautiful. There's a few things that stood out to me there. And I just want to know, and I don't want to put words in your mouth either, but if it shaped the way that you show up as a parent now. So I guess being an only child, and you're very right. We I guess label only children, and it can be done, I guess with a negative connotation attached to it. I think most of the time it's a negative connotation. Oh, you're an only child, so you wouldn't understand how to share or how to
You're
do.
spoiled.
And then you've been, I guess, encouraged by your parents to, I guess, try and do a lot of things. And then your curiosity, is that all something you bring into your relationship with Keanu now? Is as a parent, as a dad, is that something you bring in there, or is it? It's there, but it's not really an important part of anything.
Yeah, well, it's something I'm very mindful of, and he's 2.5 now, so he doesn't seem to be quite at a stage where it's right to enroll him in formal education, but I really value that state of curiosity and encouraging that, because that's what I'm like, and what I found a lot of joy in is being curious, and also getting a lot of encouragement from people around me, especially older people who would notice, oh, like you're very curious, or I remember one of my clients in Canada just mentioning, oh, I can tell you're a lifelong learner, but presenting that as a very positive thing. So, like, okay, I took that on board. And we tested. It's like, okay, does it seem to be good to always be curious and to learn? Like, yeah, okay, it does. Generally seems to pay off. So when it comes to being a father, I try to be very attentive to the things that my son Keanu is curious about, and not at this stage just not get in his way. I both myself and my wife try to let him explore and within safe limits, we try not to restrict. So especially at this stage with his physical development, like allowing him to climb on stuff and not worrying about, obviously if he's covered in gunk, we don't want to get the house absolutely ruined, but we're not precious about him, dirtying the walls or stepping on pillows or like walking on the you're climbing up on tables, so trying to encourage that natural curiosity, like and I, it seems to be paying off, because we take him to the playground and he seems very competent at playing on his own, like following his own whims. So certainly on the aspect of curiosity, it's something that I'm very conscious of and would intend to encourage as much as possible. And then, yeah, giving him as many opportunities as we can. I think my plan would be to notice what he's interested in, offer him opportunities to dive deeper into that, but also being cognizant of the fact that he's probably going to like certain things only for a certain period of time. Maybe he'll be into painting, but then and so give him up, buy him paintbrushes, get him canvas, but also understanding that he may just one day wake up and decide he doesn't like painting anymore, and that's okay too. So yeah, being curious, being open, yeah, that's certainly something I'm trying to be mindful of and intend to encourage as much as possible.
It's actually one thing I noticed when we went to the park together that day. It's you were very like very involved and observant, but you let Keanu go and do what he wanted to do without very little, I guess, guidance from you. You were there, you know, if he fell over or in a potential, I guess, was about to, you know, I guess, do something that might cause him a bit more harm. You were there, but yeah, you were very much, you know, okay, let's just see what you want to play with and encourage that in him. Whereas, and I guess the reason it stood out for me is because I feel the complete opposite. I'm more of the, I guess, a helicopter kind of parent that I think hoverer, hoverish. So yeah, it really stuck out to me. And then we kind of had a conversation, probably not specifically to that day, but it was definitely around the play aspect with children and encouraging that and letting them, you know, that's how they explore the world, and not getting in their way of doing that. Just jumping back, and you touched on it a little bit. So Canada was a call to adventure. So do you want to talk a little bit about your experience in Canada?
Sure. So, yeah, is there a particular angle that you want me to touch on? Because it was quite an adventure.
I guess if you feel any of it, I guess shaped, I mean probably all of it shaped how you are now, but any, I guess, defining moments over there, yeah, the reason for going there, if it was just more than a call to adventure, and then the reason for coming back as well.
Yeah, so the reason I went was, it was, I think a lot of young people just have that call to adventure when, particularly when you finish school and maybe you realize that my future may be more restricted in career or family, and so now I have these precious few years perhaps to explore and try things and see the world a bit. So I'd been on some trips in my early, like late teens, early 20s. Like I did a backpacking trip up to Cairns on my own, and that was really wonderful just to be more self-sufficient. And perhaps that relates to, like, I'm very much a homebody. Like it is, I'm very aware of the fact that I like my space and the predictability and the comfort of it. Maybe more introverted in the sense that I just feel quite comfortable and get a lot of energy being alone or with just close company. And so to get out was a challenge, like to get out and to backpack and to like book hostels and flights and travel and meet new people. It was a really interesting challenge. And I was so glad that I did it. And then I got the taste for it and I wanted more. And so I also then went on a trip for a few weeks to Europe with a close friend. And we went to Italy, Spain, and Portugal and loved that. And then while we were in Rome, I'd met a couple of, there's Florence and Rome. There was a two groups of people that really connected deeply with. There's a group of guys who we got close to after attending the La Tomatina festival in, I want to say it's just outside of Florence, but I could be wrong about that. But it's this annual festival in this small town that normally has like a few hundred people. And for this one weekend, it's got like thousands of people. And these people line these narrow streets and these fire trucks come through loaded with tomatoes. And they throw the tomatoes into the crowd, and everyone throws tomatoes at each other, and you're just covered head to toe in tomato juice by the end of it. It's this crazy festival, and there's an after party where we ran into we'd run into some people, some guys who we'd met at a previous hostel, and we like briefly conversed and felt we connected, but then we ran into them at this after party. We're like, oh, you know, you guys are connected, and it turns out our itineraries matched. So we ended up traveling a bit together. And these were guys that were from around Toronto. They're all in Ontario. And yeah, really, really lovely people. And, you know, a few of them are now some of my dearest friends. And also, when we were in Rome, there was a girl that I'd met who also was from just out in Ontario. And we connected really, really strongly. And so for the year after the Europe, I kept in contact with this girl. I kept in contact with these guys. And when I felt that I wanted to keep traveling, do something a bit more significant, maybe live overseas for a while. And I was torn between Canada and I was considering London or somewhere in England, partly because of the cultural similarities to Australia and the visa would be quite accessible. But then I was ultimately drawn to Canada because I knew these guys and knew I'd have friends. And there was this girl there that I wanted to go and see if that would work out. Needless to say, the friendship with the guys did, but the girl didn't. And, you know, I went through that heartbreak, which was a great learning experience as well. But that's what ultimately drew me there. And it was great. It was that extension of independence. It was going out and seeing, let's see what happens when I don't have parents and support networks right here available. Can I foster and prove to myself that I can be independent and can take care of myself and I can be capable like that? Because I felt a lot of insecurity feeling like I had the potential, but never really putting it to the test by only living at home with my parents and having all that support. And so, yeah, it was a great experience. I didn't have much of a plan. I decided just to go and see what, hopefully get a job, maybe get a job where I could meet people, or thinking maybe working in a bar or in hospitality somewhere. And my roommate, and one who's one of these guys who I'd met, a dear friend of mine named Mike, he was going to a gym at the time, which was one of the biggest biggest franchises in the country, named Good Life. And I thought, well, I'm going to stick around, so I may as well join the gym. I went to join the gym and saw a sign saying looking for personal trainers. And I just inquired about if that was something that would be possible for me. And it turned out that the barrier to entry for personal training in Canada is exceptionally low. It's a weekend course, unlike Australia, which is at least 6 months at TAFE. And so I did the course and got started, and I just absolutely loved it. And in a similar way to where I was saying I'm a bit of a homebody, I remember a couple of years in looking at Google Maps, and it had been following me. I'd left it so it would track me, and you can see this timeline over a year of all your travels, and mine was literally home gym. It was just this back and forward, and then once every 6 months or so, it would be this massive, because I'd do a trip to the States or something. Yeah. So it'd be this massive travel, but then just just back and forward. I just spent all my time there, and it was great. I fell in love with the craft of being a teacher and meeting so many wonderful people of all different walks of life, and had many adventures. It was a great time. Yeah.
Beautiful. And you met your wife over there, or your now wife over there, did you?
Yeah. So we met through Tinder, the dating app, or the hookup app, or the meeting app, whatever you want to call it. And something I'd learned using dating apps, because I used them quite a bit when I was overseas especially, was that if you click with someone, you want to meet them as soon as possible, because there's a very common trap I found where you will start talking to someone, you click, and then for whatever reason you don't meet straight away, and then it remains in the digital world and you build this fantasy, this imaginary version of who this person is, based on kind of inferring from these simple words that you're seeing. You'll project personality onto it, and intent, and this whole narrative around it. And I found that the problem with that is that that will then either almost dissuade you from wanting to meet, because you get nervous, oh my God, you build this person up in your mind, you get nervous about actually meeting them, and what if I disappoint them? Or it's, if you do meet, often inevitably they won't meet your expectations, and you won't meet theirs. And even though you might have got along otherwise, your idea of one another doesn't line up of who each other will be, and then it just doesn't work out. And then that was actually a big problem. I on reflection, I realized with this girl that I met in Rome, is that we met in Rome, we got along great, but then we spent this year only talking online, And I think that's where we created this idea of who each other was rather than really understanding who we were. So then when we meet again, it's like this, you're expecting to just like click and just like you do when you're on the chat, but there's this odd disconnect. And yeah, it's very, very difficult. That tension is very difficult to reconcile. And you realize, oh, this person isn't who I thought they were. And I guess I'm not who they thought I was. And it can be very discouraging and disappointing. And so with my wife, my now wife, we spoke like very briefly and got along. And then very quickly we were like, hey, like, do you want to meet up and just meet and just have a chat? So we did that as soon as possible. And obviously very, very, very grateful that we did. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. I guess that leads into, you know, when it obviously all went well, and your wife fell pregnant. That was in Canada, it was, yeah. I guess how was that experience? You obviously talked about earlier, you knew that you wanted to be a dad at some point. So how was it when it actually was becoming reality?
Oh, I mean, you know, it's surreal. I remember walking, because we did want to have a baby. So we, like my wife went off the contraceptive pill and, you know, we'd hoped to fall pregnant. It was something that we were planning for. It's something we both wanted. But I remember coming back home to the apartment and my wife telling me that she's pregnant, and it's this, yeah, it's like shock, but not like it was so strange, because it wasn't a huge feeling. It was almost a numbness. It was almost shocking because of the non-feeling.
Yeah,
because it was like, okay, great, like it wasn't a total surprise because we were planning for it. So it was like, okay, this thing that we were planning to happen has happened, but also, oh, it's happened.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this is real now. I wasn't sad or disappointed, but I also wasn't like elated with joy.
Yeah.
And it was a very similar feeling to when he was born. It's not this, for me, it wasn't like a, oh, like here he is, like tears and joy and ecstasy. It was like, ooh, okay, this is real now. Like there he is. Okay. And even through the pregnancy, like my wife and I would say, it's like, it doesn't even feel real.
Yeah.
Even when a belly would start to grow and you could feel him, it's still, you look at the ultrasound, it would start to become more real, but it still didn't feel real. I don't even think it felt real until maybe some days or weeks after he was born.
Yeah.
It was still so surreal, but it was a very shocking experience.
Yeah. I think you've described that so well, because I think for those that have never had kids before, and there is this, I guess, this built up expectation that you have to be a certain way. So obviously if you plan, you know, it's excitement, you should be excited and things like that. But I think what you described is those are feelings in themselves. So without being able to label those feelings, they're feelings that have been felt, and it's the, oh, okay, yep. And you're trying to search for this feeling, but I guess you've never had that feeling. Like I certainly didn't. I'd never had that feeling before. So I didn't know what to do with it. It was like, well, I'm not happy. I'm not sad. I'm not surprised. I'm not shocked. But so I didn't know what to do. There wasn't a box or a definition for it. So yeah. And being born, a very similar experience to you. It was like, yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can see, you know, Betty in front of me, I can see Axel in front of me, but it's like, yep, whether you're still processing it, or again, it's a feeling that's never been felt before. So the first for me was obviously different to the, so Betty being born was very different to Axel being born. I'd had those feelings before, but different experiences as well. So what does fatherhood and being a dad mean to you?
Like it's everything in some way. It's, I often think about how throughout human history, there seems to be a common trend of this desire to immortalize ourselves. Like when you walk in a city and you might see a statue of some great leader or politician or activist. And, you know, granted, they probably didn't put it up themselves, but this, in a sense, is trying to immortalize this person. You know, we have immortal figures in our culture, like whether he lived or not, Jesus Christ, or you know, Gautama the Buddha, or Muhammad, or we have these figures that have somehow like transcended the limitations of their own flesh and blood life and have become immortalized within the culture. And you even hear like maybe it's these conspiracy theories about the rich and the famous looking for ways to extend life, and you know, like the taking of the young, injecting yourself with young blood to rejuvenate the cells and to seek immortality. And this is common within our fiction as well. You know, it's often the villain that's the one who's trying to like desperately grasp onto life and to hold on to life. And we commonly paint that archetype as the villainous, the bad, the evil one. Which I find quite interesting. But I think having children is it is that in its in the closest we can get to that, and maybe in its most natural and purest form. It's an opportunity for us to keep the story going, to keep the story of our lives going, but through the next generation. Like, isn't it so cool that you look at your children and hopefully they'll never see you, like they will see you die, but you're never going to see them die. Like as far as from a parent's perspective, you see the child being born, and then you will die. Their existence is open and infinite, and like a part of you is going to carry on. And so it's being a father is about keeping the story going. And I think that there is a risk there of making it or of identifying with that as being it's about me. But I think you realize as well that, well, us as individuals are the product of all the people that have come before us and the people that have influenced us too. You know, as we age, it's a common story to recognize how much of our parents we see within ourselves. You know, oh, I'm making that expression or using that turn of phrase that my dad always uses. Or wow, like my smile is just like my mom's, isn't it? Or my attitude towards this is, yeah, it's just like them. Or and so, yeah, we're the product of our parents and our upbringing and our culture and our friends and loved ones and just the people all around us. So, you know, there is some sense of individuality. There is some me, but then if you really think about it feels like there's more that's not me than is actually genuinely me. It's actually quite a puzzle to try to get down to what is that thing that is essentially me versus the stuff that I've picked up and learned and had inherited. So it almost seems like it's a responsibility, it's a duty to keep that journey going. It's like, well, who am I to sever that journey or sever that tie now? Like, I'm the product of generations and generations and generations of people that have been born and lived and been healthy enough to and you know been well enough to find a partner and to have children and raise those children and those children have children and it's all led to me. So who the fuck am I to stop that now? Like, you know what, it's almost a human responsibility to keep that going. Like I'm a recipient of all of that, so it's my duty now to help someone else be to be the recipient and to carry the legacy forward. So it's, yeah, it's both a personal responsibility and like a responsibility of being a human. So I think it only, yeah, like it's deeply meaningful in like the biggest sense of the word is the way I see it. To be a father, it's a responsibility. But it's also powerful because I do see it as a choice. Like it's not, it's a responsibility, it's a duty, but it's one you can choose to take on or not. And I think that's what makes it powerful. like choice is everything. It's the difference between the greatest joy or the deepest sorrow. I really like the example where I remember a few years ago, one of my clients in Canada was going into going into a sensory deprivation tank once a week, where you go into this tank where the water is at body temperature. You're sitting in a capsule. You're lying in water that's the same temperature as your body, so you can't really feel it. It's pitch black. The sound is cut off, so you're just in nothingness. And he would describe this as such a deeply peaceful and profoundly like positive experience. And I thought, how interesting that when you're put in total isolation by choice, it's a profoundly positive thing. But on the flip side, it is also the worst punishment we can impose on someone, which is solitary confinement in prison. Like, you put someone in prison, but then the worst of the worst in the prison get put in isolation away from everybody else. So when it's imposed upon you, it's the worst possible punishment. But when it's a choice, it's the best.
Yeah, wow.
So that it's not the situation that's good or bad. It's whether you choose it or not that makes it good or bad in essence. And so I think a lot of people suffer unnecessarily because they feel like they're not making choices in their life. And so being fortunate enough to like choose to like to feel like I choose my wife. I say feel like, because I guess there's another discussion about free will and determinism, which I'm also deeply fascinated by. But let's assume we have choice. So it feels like you choose your partner, you choose to have a child, you choose to be with that child and to raise them. So every step along the way is a choice. You're taking on and accepting that responsibility too. So it doesn't feel like a burden. Because anytime you kind of like, oh, this, you know, things are difficult, you're like, yeah, but I've chosen this. Who am I to complain? It's like, I'm choosing to play this game.
Yeah.
You know, and you could argue, well, no, you're locked in. Well, I mean, as dark as it is to say, I could run away. I could end my own life at any point. Like, you could get out of this game at any point. So every act of existence is a choice, as I see it. So it's a duty, it's a responsibility, but it's one that that we choose. I've chosen, and so it's a deeply, profoundly positive thing for that reason.
Yeah. I need a moment to like just soak all that in, because that is, I've never heard it described in such a way. And it's just so powerful. It's so powerful. And the difference between choosing not to as well. I don't even know how to add any. I've got nothing for that except just to soak it in. Absolutely love it. What are the challenges that you face as a dad?
The one that's been really present lately is wanting deeply to be a good provider. And especially in being a sole trader, starting my own business. You're starting from just the ground up. And so again, this is a choice. So I don't begrudge it. I embrace it, but it's hard to balance that feeling of wanting to really provide materially, you know, be able to provide, bring money in, and therefore to have opportunities that money provides. But then also balancing that with being present and providing as a human being, providing with my attention and with my love, because especially with, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people go through this regardless of the type of work, but there's always work to do. And it's very easy to just always be mulling over, okay, what else could I be doing? Like, what's the next Instagram post I could make to promote my work? What's the, you know, what's the conversation I could be having with someone that I know to try to encourage them to come in and come into class? Or, you know, what could I be doing to make this the facility better? Like what could I do to learn more about the craft? Like there's always something to be thinking about. And a big motivator for that is to be a good provider and to be a good role model in that sense. But then at the same time, trying to find a way to, I actually don't like the idea of compartmentalization in the sense, whenever I hear that or think about that, it feels like a fragmentation. Like I'm trying to, like there's a me that is the worker, that's the businessman or is the teacher. And then there's me that's the father. Like I actually prefer to look at it as this, it's all me. It's all this one thing. I'm not an entirely different person in this different context. But it's trying to be actively aware of the need to be present in what I'm doing at the time and to balance, like to manage time and energy appropriately. So, you know, allocate certain time for work and for thinking about the business and really focus on that when I'm doing it. But then when I'm with the family, trying to really be present and attentive in that time too, and to not let other things like creep in. And like, I think it's a challenge for everyone. Like anyone who's tried to meditate knows this, you know, you set an intention. I'm just going to sit and focus on my breath for might be 10 minutes. And then instantly this flooded with thoughts and the mind is always trying to solve problems. And, you know, it's the nature of the human condition. But from the high level, that's the biggest challenge is really trying to be present and attentive. And that doesn't necessarily mean like engaging. Like I don't think it's necessary to always be like for me to be the one that's this active and giving, but more like what you're doing right now, just being present and listening and attentive. I think there's so much value in that. Yeah. Like he might just be playing on his own, but just noticing what he's doing.
Yeah.
And you know, joining in if it seems appropriate, like in playing along, or if it seems like he wants that. But sometimes it's just being there. And even for my own sake, thinking about being like an 80-year-old, I want to have like these memories. I don't want to be thinking about or struggling to remember what my children were like when they were little.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, I want to have these great memories that I think we can only really have by really being present. Like there's this idea that I quite like, which is that our memories, like the things that we remember most are the things that occur when we are most present, like fully present, like present in the body, present in the mind, present in the heart and in the emotions. And like for good or bad, like often we remember quite traumatic experiences because they're a shock that like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. And you're very like in that moment, it's impossible to escape it. So for good or bad, I think the things that we remember the most are the ones in which we are most present for. And then I also just trust that we make the best choices when we're really present as well, because there's like just a deep intuitive knowing, of knowing of what to do, but you can only know what to do if you know what's happening, and you only know what's happening if you're attentive to what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you've touched on so many interesting things there, because you started that by, I guess, wanting to provide for your family and it being a struggle there. And I think it's about defining the contribution to your family. I think we look at providing in a sense of like generationally what, you know, our fathers did and what the grandfathers did and things like that. And a lot of that's tied to financial, whereas contribution and being present and being able to, you know, to sit there and have that time to be present is just It's neither more valuable or less valuable, but it's another valuable addition to contribute to the household. And I think it's undersold. And yeah, it's a challenge that many of us face. But I think it also leans into being able to, I guess, find your own inner guidance and intuition as well when you're able to sit there and be present, and not be distracted by things. And yeah, it's a challenge. And I can imagine, running your own business, you're trying to block out thoughts of, of the business when you're sitting there. And it's, yeah, I think it's a dance. It's a fine dance.
Yeah, it's a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
And there's always going to be, a bit of give and take and understanding and finding the right steps in that dance. So yeah, I guess on the flip side of it, what's the best thing about being a dad?
It's hard to put into words, but it's just like there's just so much joy when you like when you see your child like learn and grow and just be, and it's like it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Like you can study the biology, you can understand like how, sperm and an egg, and then the cells multiply and it's growing in the womb, and you can understand that all technically, but it still blows your fucking mind that it's like I'm me and you made a person, and that person is both a bit like me and a bit like you. And also entirely his own thing, his own person. And it's this discovery. It's like the best movie you've ever seen that doesn't end. It's like watching this all this drama unfold, and it's just incredible. And I think one of the I kind of knew this intellectually, but then to actually experience this has been really, really useful in what I teach as well, in teaching movement, because you see when children, when they have these breakthroughs, when they develop something new, whether it's a new sound or a new movement, standing, crawling, like walking, a new gesture, whatever it is, we impulsively and just intuitively celebrate that. Like we all love everyone, even people like we all love it when a child takes their first steps. Everyone does. If you don't, you're like a fucking psychopath. Like I don't want to know you if that doesn't bring you joy. And we all love that. And so what I really love about learning is I think that there is something deeply celebratory about learning. And especially and I think, in essence, we learn primarily through the body. We exist in a body. This is a physical reality. And so everything comes at least through the body, even if it's getting to the head, it's coming through the physical senses and then being interpreted by the brain. But I would always say to my students, and now I really, really believe it, that I think that a great physical practice is one that's about learning new ways of being, new ways of operating, learning new movements or like subtle things, learning about new ways of moving with the emotions or new ways of moving the thoughts. But it's like this deeply satisfying, celebratory thing, just like it is with children. It's more obvious with them because it happens so rapidly. Like within the first 6 months, you're having all these breakthroughs, and it can happen a little slower as we age. So maybe it's a little harder to notice. And culturally, a lot of us give up on learning. We kind of get to a certain point. We've learned all we need to learn, and then we get locked into our routines and our patterns, and that's it. And I think that's I think that's for many of us why life slips us by, is we just get locked into routine and then the days just blend into the weeks, into the months, into the years. And then you look back, you're like it's been 50 years. How did that happen? But like all this is to say, I'm trying to like explain rationally why it's great. But I think in essence, it's just this deeply felt like wonderful experience to first of all, create, have this human just suddenly appear that like, I guess we did create him, but he also just nature took care of a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, magical process. And then just watching him grow and learn and develop, it's like, it just feels so good. It feels so good.
Yeah.
And makes all the tantrums and mess and everything else like worth it. It's like, yeah. Wouldn't you agree?
Would, yeah. I'd heard, I heard Dr. Zach Bush talk about that, talk about it recently in terms of like, it's still something that nobody can fully explain, that whole process of how, like having a baby kind of thing and how it grows and what it does. And like biology, we can understand it to an extent, but then how it manifests into this living, breathing thing standing in front of us, it's like nobody can explain that. Mm. You know, it's just this thing of nature that, you know, and now it's here and now it's to be felt and to be experienced. And yeah, I think if we get in the way with letting other things kind of influence that in terms of, you know, getting sucked into the meltdowns, the tantrums, the challenging stuff, it takes away from the being able to experience the joy of the beauty that is, I guess, kids and children and babies and just, yeah, being a parent, being a dad. So yeah, I think you've explained it beautifully as well. So I really, really enjoy that. You touched on legacy before, when you beautifully, you know, talked about what you know, fatherhood and being a dad meant to you. I guess I just want to finish with, what do you want your boy to say about you when you said we move through life, and you know, I guess the natural pattern is, you know, we die before our children. I guess, yeah, how do you want to be remembered by your boy now, and potentially, you know, if you've got more children, that how do you want to be remembered by them?
I want him, like I'm tearing up thinking about it. Success for me would be my son knowing, like deeply knowing that his dad loves him. Like really, really knowing that. Not just like, oh yeah, dad would say that he loves me, but just knowing like, yeah, my dad loved me. Like really, really loved me. Yeah, that's all. Like
that's all that needs to be said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for your time today. Thank you for sharing. I personally got so much value out of this conversation, and it's kind of I say it's a selfish thing because I do get so much, but I just know there's so much value in dad sharing, and I know there's so much value in other dads hearing other dads speak about it. So I just want to thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing so openly.
Sure, man.
And yeah, I hope we get to talk again soon.
Yeah, it's been really cool the last, like, I guess the last year or so, because during lockdown, it was a little tough to connect with people. It was a blessing for us because I just got to spend so much time with a newborn. But it's been a really cool experience to connect with other dads now, to be able to have that to connect over. I've just had so many great chats lately with people that You know, and sometimes it's like people like yourself or you know, someone I would already connect with otherwise, but just to be able to have this other layer that you can connect over. And, you know, you like there's a saying, I don't know where it comes from, that shared joy is joy doubled and shared suffering is suffering halved. So I think there's a real benefit to, like, I find it really beneficial to know that other dads struggle.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, okay, it's part of it's like, oh, it's not just me. Yeah, this just seems to be the way of things. Okay. And there's something reassuring about that. But then also, yeah, like when you, cause these things are so hard to put into words, but then you just have that moment of knowing, you're like, yeah,
yeah.
Like, yeah, you get it. Yeah, you're like, it's good, hey. Yeah, I've been finding that really, really fun and a really, I guess I didn't really think about it or didn't anticipate it necessarily. It just sort of organically happened, but it's been really, really nice to be able to, like, I really value connection with people. I really love just like deep connection with people. It's the first thing I say about the work that I do is that it's about relationships, like building deep and authentic relationships, both with other people, but also with ourselves. And I really mean that. And so any way that you can relate and connect over these like shared experiences of being a parent, being a father, it's really valuable to me too. So like, I really appreciate you asking me to have a chat. I'm honored. It's great to see you. It's been too long. I hope I can see you in person sooner rather than later. Yeah, thanks for your time and for the great questions.
Thank you for joining us on the Dads Lifting Dads podcast, Ben Byfield.
You're welcome. Bye for now.